internet, welcome to episode 67 of the Assorted Calibers podcast, the Second Amendment podcast. There's a little bit for everyone. I'm Weird Beard, and tonight we are doing an ACP roundtable show. And so on the table, of course, we have the wonderful, the lovely, the amazing co-hostess of the show.
I think it's funny how you keep adding honorifics every time. Eventually, it'll be like 30 minutes before you say my name.
God Empress Aaron Paulette.
That must be the short form.
Is this the face of mercy?
Do not gaze upon her. You will immediately go blind.
Murder Kitten has no mercy.
And then he's all right, David.
Enjoy your wombat poop.
And a little less than all right. Like, definitely not all right. Oddball.
Stays crunchy in milk.
Egghead said that he would be able to make it. I have not seen him yet, so he might make a sudden appearance. He might not. Hopefully he will.
We're over the web, so I don't know if you'll actually see any of us.
Yeah.
So just...
So how are all of y'all doing?
He's patronizing the Southerners.
That's cultural appropriation, and it's not okay.
That's true.
Oh, yeah.
Although I do think it's adorable how much the damn Yankee from New York is suddenly defending the honor of Southerners and our culture.
Well, one of the folks I know from the store, who was born and raised in rural Tennessee, we're chatting one day, and he basically declared me that I actually was always a Southerner. I was just born in the wrong state, which I'm assuming is a high praise thing.
Well, yeah.
Okay. I took it right then. Yeah. Oh, I mean, and there was another guns. Funny thing.
He's gentlemanly. He doesn't talk so fast that we can't understand him. And you like sweet tea and brisket, right?
Depending on how sweet the tea. I'm not a huge fan of iced tea in general. I like hot tea.
Uh-oh.
But
I'm pretty
it just
sure
means more for them.
Southern sweet tea does not contain any actual tea.
No, it's just sugar.
Oh, okay. Then I'm fine with that.
Yeah, it's sugar water with some reddish coloring added. It's probably red 40.
Caramel coloring. And not only do I like brisket, not only do I love brisket, I make brisket, and I want to get a smoker so I can make proper brisket.
Awesome. I actually did a little BS smoking today. I've got a crab apple tree in my backyard. Ooh. And literally I went out to my brush pile. I cut a bunch of branches off of a limb that I'd taken down, I don't know, this year, last year. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. A branch. So it's seasoned.
It wasn't important. And then wrapped it up tightly in foil and poked a bunch of holes in it and nice. threw it on my gas grill and cooked a chicken.
Nice. Did you strip the bark off?
I did not. Somebody said in my, I posted about it on Facebook and somebody said, did you strip the bark off? And I didn't. It was literally just sticks. Like,
yeah.
It's actually the second time I used it. I made pork chops the other day and I threw them in a cup of water to soak because Ryan Machad told me that, oh yeah, no, I use, I'm trying to remember if he said he used oak, apple or hickory wood chips that he had soaked in water and he threw them on his gas grill. And so I said, all right, well, so I soaked the sticks in water and then wrapped them up and they didn't really make a whole lot of smoke. So today, no, it's exact same package.
Flavor seam, really.
Yeah. And so exact same package. Like I hadn't even touched it, literally opened up the grill and it's sitting there on the grates. And I just like pulled out my knife and just jabbed a couple more holes in the foil and just made them a little bit more aggressive holes and then threw it back on. And then immediately, as soon as the grill got hot, I could see some nice blue smoke coming out and could smell it. And so I'm like, okay, this is working. And I did a little post-mortem afterwards because I'm like, because I didn't re-soak it was just dry wood at that point. Open it up and yeah, it's 100% applewood charcoal in there right now. So
I think we need to have a meet off between you, David, and my friend Jack.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like it'd be a real sausage fest.
But I'm
shots fired.
But actually, I was thinking is when you're talking about the foil packet and poking the holes in it, he's like, aggressive holes. Like, that sounds like a great name for a cover band, but a cover band for what?
Hole.
That's too easy.
It's too easy.
Nirvana.
Ooh. Especially the double and triple entendres for aggressive holes.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking of some other angry girl band, but I don't know enough about music.
The Donnas? Kitty?
See, you could just be saying words and I wouldn't know.
You've never heard of the Donnas?
So when I was in college, one of my college professors had a daughter who was in an all-girl band, and the band was named Overdose.
Please tell me they were Riot Girl.
I
think this might have been before Riot Girl existed. This was like mid-90s.
Is Riot Girl a band? Or is it a style?
Riot Girl is a style. Spelled Riot, G-R-R-R-L.
Of course, because it sounds angry.
And yeah, it's essentially a hardcore punk. Hardcore punk performed by all females.
Yeah, nice. Pretty much.
Yep.
So it's loud, it's fast, and it involves ladies growling and screaming.
Mm-hmm.
And awesome!
That sounds like Monday morning at a coffee shop in New York.
I mean...
Right?
I did date a girl in the late 90s who was seriously into the Riot Girl stuff. So,
well, what were some of her favorite bands?
She was a huge fan of Sleater-Kinney. I'm trying to think of some of the other ones.
I have nothing to compute to this conversation except witty remarks or half witty remarks.
David, you need more punk rock in your life.
Maybe not.
I highly recommend going on Spotify and pulling up Hated by G.G. Allin and the Murder Junkies.
Or don't.
I just find the image of David thrashing to some punk rock just hilarious.
I'm always just amused at the Weird Beard sometimes gets a little loaded after the show's done. And sends Aaron links to G.G. Allin concert videos, and Aaron is smart enough to never click on them ever.
Yes, I find Weird's musical taste to be as suspect as Oddball's movie taste.
Wow, shots fired.
I stand by what I said.
I am not disagreeing, but that's
fair.
A pretty harsh claim on Weird's musical taste.
No, it's pretty on the money.
Okay.
I mean,
it all depends.
I mean, you know, my love of particularly grotesque punk rock music. I mean, if you're going to listen to punk rock, make it be punk rock. Don't go listen to Green Day and say, oh, this is punk. This is a bunch of rich white kids all sitting around in Daddy's mansion singing about take it down the Bush administration.
Oh, Daddy probably works for the Bush administration.
Oh, you're going to get us. But also Aaron greatly detests my love of dubstep.
As well she should, and you should feel bad for yourself.
I don't know. What's your feeling on Tom Waits, Aaron? Or Warren Zevon?
Tom Waits.
Warren Zevon.
Cool. The best performance he ever gave was as Renfield in Coppola's Dracula.
That was pretty good.
Warren Zevon, Is he the one who did Werewolves of London?
Yes.
Okay.
See, even I knew that.
Yeah. So he's
I knew
at
a music
least,
thing. I'm very happy.
He's at least amusing.
Mm-hmm. I will say, even as someone that really likes him, he is very hit or miss. And like, he's got a whole ton of albums out. And let me tell you, like, I'll be just listening and being like, yeah, this is just another one. And then suddenly I'll get a song like, oh my God, where did this come from?
So,
but, yeah.
Weird, is this a round table or is this a mag dump?
This is a round table.
Okay.
Okay.
So that should mean that we talk about things that
a topic?
Are Yeah, I mean, we need some sort of a topic rather than just.
I was doing the opening show banter. I thought I'd say hi, and it was interesting.
And I thought I would throw to whatever main topic there was, but fine. Do it yourself.
I have something that
did you actually do homework for this?
No, it's just something that popped up, and I saw it, and I thought it was interesting.
What popped up, David?
It's personal.
I mean.
Anyway, it's Manatee County, Florida.
Mm-hmm. Oh, dear.
And it's
hold on a second. Hoon!
Thank you. Thank you very much. Although you need to work on your accent.
I mean, to be fair, manatees don't really, they don't make, I told Larry that. I'm like, manatees don't have, like, they don't echolocate. He goes, I know. It's fun.
Yeah, don't challenge him about Wendell. It cannot end well for you.
Oh, he didn't care.
No, of course not, but it sounds
better. The marine biologist talking to the author that has more money than God. He bought a
friggin'
mountain. Guess who wins?
Yep. But anyway, so Manatee County, Florida, the Manatee School for the Arts in Palmetto hired basically combat veterans who they've armed or allowed to be armed with semi-automatic rifles to patrol and guard the campus.
Mm-hmm.
That is surprisingly sensible, given the fact that, I need to do a little bit of Florida geography here. Manatee County is on the west coast of Florida, and Tampa St. Pete is in a little inlet, it's more like a protrusion that creates a bay, and you've got St. Petersburg at the end of the protrusion, the isthmus, however you say that, and Tampa's isthmus. There on the mainland, sort of like San Francisco and Oakland, and then it does connect via causeway to the mainland, so you can just drive straight to St. Pete instead of having to go the long way around. Trust me, there's a reason I'm bringing this up. So Manatee County is in that southern part, the mainland that connects via causeway to the island, the isthmus. But where St. Petersburg is Pinellas County. And Pinellas County has some of the stupidest, worst, most asinine gun laws, gun enforcement, anti-gun sheriff that I have ever seen. And so the fact that there is a next door county that is doing this is shocking. Pleasantly shocking, but shocking nevertheless.
Right. Now, according to right. this article,
you don't care. No, okay.
Like, no, that makes sense. I mean, that's, it's kind of like with, little geography lesson from my history, Delaware County, New York. Delaware County is basically just on the other side of Rockland County. Rockland County is a bedroom community for New York City. So visualizing the politics there when it comes to firearms,
mm-hmm.
Delaware County is very pro-gun, but it's actually close. It's more like Pennsylvania than New York because, well, it is.
Is it because so many police officers from New York City live there?
Possibly.
I mean, that's is this the mythical Copland I've heard about?
That's New Jersey.
Oh.
Copland was in New Jersey.
Oh, okay.
But just...
Oh, wait, there's an actual place called Copland?
Not officially.
No, that's not his actual name, but it's...
And it's where the New York City cops live?
Right, because they can't afford to live in New York City.
Yeah.
So the conceit from the movie... Here, and it was,
to help you understand Aaron's explanation visually, I hope that helps.
Yes. So the movie, it was like a late 90s movie by... but it had... Sylvester Stallone in it.
He wrote and directed it too.
Maybe. And I want to say Harvey Keitel as well. But the idea is that Stallone, for whatever reason, couldn't make it in the police academy, but he was able to become a sheriff. And so he's sheriff of this place in New Jersey where all the other cops come and live. And so there is a large amount of tension because, well, see, he's not a real cop. And, you know, it's brown versus blue. And I thought it was very well done.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's also a lot of corruption, either actual or implied.
Oh, yeah. And
that was one of the interesting things was who's actually corrupt and who just looks corrupt.
Well, now I have to see if it's on Amazon Prime.
Yeah, or Netflix.
I may have to watch it again. I remember watching it and thinking it was okay, but it kind of it didn't push me over the edge.
So it is on Prime, but you have to pay $4 to rent it.
Okay.
Or buy it, weirdly enough.
I'm thinking I've never actually seen it. So I remember it being coming out. I just never saw it.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to defend it as high art or must see or anything, but it's like, it's pretty good.
It's got some hidden depths, I think.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that it stuck with me for all this time. So
yeah, mm-hmm. I think I watched it when it was like fresh out of the theaters. So it's been a while.
Right. So anyway, so back to this, this particular article, the principal, Bill Jones, hiring these guys was quoted as saying, "We're not looking for a fair fight. We're looking at an overwhelming advantage."
Oh my God. I love it.
Yeah.
And one of the guards has 15 years of infantry experience and is a combat veteran. The second combat veteran guardian will start working later in February. Jones wanted combat veterans who can be trusted to react quickly and correctly under fire. "I wouldn't hire anybody who hadn't been shot at and fired back. I need someone who has been in that situation." The Palmetto police chief supports the use of semi-automatic weapons, something not everyone was comfortable with.
Okay, let's dive right into that one right there.
Yeah.
I saw a interview with Colleen Noir, and he really made a point. I mean, maybe it should have been obvious to me, but also, I mean, for anybody who follows my love of firearms, you know, I collect military surplus guns. Mm-hmm. I carry a 1911. I love revolvers and all.
Wait,
of that.
Are you talking about you or me?
Yeah.
Yes. The answer is yes.
But literally someone was talking about to Cully and was saying like, "Oh yeah, but we're talking about just the semi-auto ones." And he goes, "That's all the guns." And
pretty much.
And at first I kind of recoiled and went, no, it's not. There's a whole magical rainbow of magical guns that are not
magical
semi-auto.
Rainbow of guns. I love that.
But then I realized, but yeah, when it comes to like the standard issue, whatever you're going to get, yeah, pretty much these days, if you're going to go buy a gun, you're going to buy a semi-auto. I remember actually hearing one of the gun dudes talking about he had bought I think they were doing 3-gun competition, and one of them had just bought a semi-auto shotgun of some sort. And he said, "Look, it's the 21st century. My shotgun's going to load itself."
Yeah, like, pretty much.
It's a fair statement of the why are you pumping your own shotgun in the year 2019?
Well, and has everybody seen the video that Ian and Carl did about how, no, seriously, firearms that aren't self-loading are completely
they're obsolete or obsolescent for purposes.
I'm sorry, I didn't quite catch that. Obsolete or obsolescent for what?
For defensive purposes.
Really?
At least non-competitive. They were actually talking about it specifically in the frames of their running their 2-gun matches.
Carl went a little stronger than that.
Yeah, he really did.
Ian was giving a little bit more benefit of the doubt, but Carl was like, "No, if you're in a defensive shooting situation and you've got a revolver and the other guy's got a semi-auto, you're at a disadvantage."
And Carl also talked about, you know, what is within most people's realistic ranges. Honestly, you're not seeing any real difference in accuracy between a decent to good semi-auto rifle and a decent to good bolt action. So,
oh God. I mean, look at the 6.5 Creedmoors and all that. Like some of these people with these dolled out guns that frankly don't cost any more or less than a slicked out Remington 700 action, you know, or these
Winchester
these
Model new, 70
or these
or
these new chassis 70, guns. Yeah.
Oh, I'd like to see some of the chassis guns come in more left-handed offering, because I would seriously consider selling a kidney for one of those.
Well, there aren't that many of you, but I'm actually surprised because, like, yeah, the chassis guns are so ridiculously modular. I find it hard to believe that someone couldn't quickly rough out. I think maybe it's just because they're so relatively new to the market that it hasn't reached that saturation.
They're pretty niche still.
But still, I mean, when you look at the price of those, you know, those chassis guns and the price of, say, a super duper tricked out AR-10 style gun, 6.5 Creedmoor, I mean, price, weight, I mean, you're really not looking at any difference between them, except for one, you can maintain your sight picture between shots. So, yeah, I mean,
yeah,
I mean, and how like dirt cheap ARs are now and all of that stuff. Again, yeah, all the revolver sales are in the toilet. I mean, they're still making them. They're still selling them. I still love them, but they're not making them and selling them like they were when I was a kid or David was a teenager.
Shots fired.
I love you, man.
I can tell.
I couldn't resist. But I mean, everybody's selling semi-autos and revolvers are like the super expensive guns now. And it's one of those like, go pick out like a Glock or a Canik or any number of like polymer framed striker fired semi-autos for dirt cheap versus the price of a nice Smith & Wesson or God forbid a Colt. And so really the whole, again, going back to that statement of some people did not like the idea that they were using semi-autos. These days, that literally means guns.
Yeah. The first commercially successful semi-automatic firearms were in the 1890s.
Mm-hmm.
It's 125 years ago.
And it was literally only because of the invention of a smokeless powder, because there were people that had messed around with it. They were around, but semi-autos shooting black powder just gets so gunked up so fast that they're barely set semi-autos. So,
yeah. Although there's several videos on YouTube, a few guys who were curious how quickly would it gunk up a semi-auto to fire with black powder, and they decided to choose the handgun that currently has the reputation of being unreliable, but historically has the reputation of being utterly reliable. Anyone want to guess which one they chose?
Was it a 1911?
Of course it was.
Yeah.
And was so this, he loaded up
a Cemetery bunch. Gun Blog?
There are a few of them. I've seen a few different videos by a few different people. But one of the ones that I saw, the guy loaded up a bunch of rounds. He did some testing to make sure that he got the right balance for functioning and reasonable accuracy. But he loaded up a bunch of rounds, and he ran like 40 rounds or something through the gun, and it kept going.
Yep. I do know the guy who ran Cemetery Gun Blog, who's also a huge G.G. Allen fan. He had loaded up an AR with black powder. And was like, I think he might have gotten a second shot off.
Yeah, gas operated, just no.
Yeah, the gas port just filled up with crap.
Oh, like, yeah. Right away.
Yeah, and I can only imagine how hard it was to squeegee all that gunk out of it.
Oh, it was actually very easy. You drive out one pin, you pull out the gas tube, you put in another one. Mm-hmm. No problem.
How expensive are gas tubes? I haven't priced them.
$10 maybe.
And in your professional opinion, would you say that the price is equal to or less than the amount of time spent to clear out said gas tube?
If you fire an AR with black powder, just replace the gas tube.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, pretty much.
Possibly the gas block, depending on how badly it messed it up. But
as a cross-reference to an old main story, I've said this to many times when my daughter has gotten extremely filthy and just saying, all right, do we clean this one up or do we just make a new one?
Well, I know which way's more fun.
At least the practice. But honestly, no, if you had something like that with a gas tube, I would recommend removing the gas tube to clean it, because the black powder residue will leak around that seal. If you watch, I forget what the technique is called, but when they throw the shadow so you can see the gas escaping from like revolvers and things like that.
Oh yeah. Where they're using the reflecting
backlight screen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Where you get the shot and you'll see like the revolver and you'll see the cylinder gap and you can actually see the shockwave behind the bullet.
Right. Yeah. There's actually a name for that, but I don't remember it. But anyway, but you'll see with an AR that gas actually sprays out behind the gas block, mm-hmm. where the gas tube comes out. It's not a perfect seal.
Yep.
Well, you're shooting black powder. That whole area is now covered in black powder residue. So yeah, pull the gas tube, clean the whole system out. Might even consider removing the gas block. Usually it's not that difficult unless some idiot used red Loctite. Not being judgmental at all. It's a known fact that people use red Loctite on guns are idiots.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Yeah. But yeah, so I just actually happened to have the Brownells catalog right next to me. So I flipped it open. I'm like, oh yeah, Brownells black nitrided gas tube, commercial retail price $8.99.
I didn't know you podcasted from your bathroom, David.
No, bathroom. I look at it on the tablet.
Okay.
The paper copy is off the desk, or in the workshop, depending.
I must say, like especially like for me personally, the Brownells catalog specifically for 1911s was absolutely solid, like good bathroom reading.
Yeah, they need to come out with another one because I was telling somebody is if you get the Brownells catalog, the first 100 pages is just ARs. The second 50 pages, the next 50 pages is all 1911. So that's actually shrunk a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the first 150 pages of this, not counting the index, 480 page catalog, 150 pages are ARs and 1911s.
Yep. And so again, reiterating, I guess that this ties a little bit into one of the topics I wanted to bring up is some of the laws that are being bandied about. And of course, they're going back to ye old quote unquote assault weapons ban.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know has any text been released yet? Have any of you guys seen any?
I have not. No.
I've seen several examples. I do not know if they are current legislation or previous legislation that's being let out. Because I know that every year of Obama's presidency, was it Barbara Boxer, I think?
Yeah.
Released her new assault weapon ban, which never went anywhere.
Yeah. But either way, the whole, just assault weapons ban, it's... You know, whatever they decide to define an assault weapon
mm-hmm.
is going to either A, create some mythical, weird, ban-compliant gun, like a semi-auto rifle that does not accept more than 10 rounds and cannot accept more than 10 rounds. And
well, have you seen the New York non-detachable magazine ARs?
I haven't seen I don't know if I've seen the specific New York ones. I know I've seen some of the California ones.
There's one that was made specifically for the New York market.
I've seen the one in California where essentially you could push one of the pins and it goes out on a quick stop and then the action hinges open like a fraction of an inch and that mm-hmm. Clears the magazine magazine catch.
Yes, I right, posted no, videos of that and another thing on Blue Collar Prepping because one of our contributors is a gun aficionado and lives in California, and so he's trying to find a way to make his AR California legal without crippling its functionality.
Again.
Yeah, I might have audio for a future audio FISC that I might be working on right now that is specifically on that as well.
I can't remember the name.
But tell us about the New York one.
Okay, I can't find the name of it.
We can dredge it up later.
Yeah,
you can send it to me tomorrow while I'll cook up the show notes right. during the week.
But basically, the magazine is not detachable, it's lowerable. So mm-hmm. you hit the magazine release, the magazine drops down like an inch, but it can't leave the magazine well. Mm-hmm. But on the right side of the magazine well, there is a port.
Oh, yes.
And your special stripper clips that fit in there.
Oh, okay.
So it's like a stripper clip with a J hook.
Yep.
So you hook the stripper clip in and you push your 10 rounds in and pop the magazine back up.
There's something very similar to that where you don't even have it drop down, but I think that they changed the upper receiver where you've got a speed loader, and when the bolt locks back, you put it into the ejection port and you thumb it down.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that one has some problems because of the distance.
The distance
down to the magazine from the ejection port. I remember reading about that as well. But this one, apparently, if I could find it, is
interesting. Old moldy history was the M14. I don't know about the M1As. I don't know. Just do any of you guys have M1As?
I do not, but I've seen a number of them in various stores.
Are the M1As milled for stripper clips?
The ones that I have seen, the standard military configuration, yes.
Okay, yeah, because so that when the M14 was adopted, they actually milled them for stripper clips, and they can accept stripper clips. So you can drop a stripper clip down through the guides in the receiver.
Yep,
and
10
then,
rounds.
And then, yeah, load 10 rounds, or I think it's five. I think the five rounds were the 308 ones that the military was issuing. But you could top off.
Both were available, but I think you're right. I think the five rounds were more common.
Yeah, but you can load them up five, or yeah, there might have been 10 rounds. I mean, for all I know, someone could make a 20-round one. But you could essentially top them off, and that was because back in the early days, especially before the Eugene Stoner came up with his very, very nice lightweight AR mag, people were very, very concerned because hey, all right, you're going to be carrying all this ammo, but it's going to be carried in this box with a spring that's very, very heavy. And mm-hmm. So you're holding a whole lot of weight in just essentially dead space. And so the idea was, but stripper clips, they don't weigh anything. And it's true. You can carry hundreds of rounds on stripper clips and it weighs virtually no more than just the rounds just rattling loose in a pouch. And so that was one of the things that the military was testing about. But of course, obviously they came up with the idea that, hey, no, just carrying lots of extra magazines are fine. Let's just make lighter magazines.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, David, that thing you were talking about, is that called comp mag? Because that seems like...
Maybe?
Because I've just been sitting here going through the BCP article and pulling out the links, and...
Similar, but this is actually a dedicated port in the lower receiver itself.
Oh, in the receiver. Oh, okay, I missed that.
Yeah,
yeah, so it's in the magazine.
The magazine capable of dropping free without probably a piece being removed from the gun.
Okay.
And right. So the mag just drops down to a load position, and then you load the magazine directly.
Yeah, so it's just it drops down, like I said, like an inch or so. So the feed lips just clear this opening in the side of the magazine well.
Okay.
And they were one of the guys I know from back in New York who runs several gun shops was involved with the development with the guy who came up with the idea and started making them. And he, of course, was the initial distributor or seller of these, both as complete rifles. But first, I believe it was just lowers, but then as complete rifles.
One of the things that I find really remarkable about the gun industry, I mean, you see it in just about every industry to some degree or another, because that's innovation and capitalism. But I think we see it most in the firearms industry because there is such a concentrated effort against it. And it reminds me of nothing more than a quote, and I don't remember by whom, but they were talking about the internet, and this person, and hopefully Oddball will chime in and tell me who said it. This person said, "The internet interprets censorship as damage and routes around it."
Yeah, yes, I've heard that phrase before.
It's a long-held phrase. I'm trying to remember who it was that actually first said it.
Well, my point being, though, is that the gun industry is exactly the same thing. It recognizes these regulations as damage and then routes around them as effectively as possible.
Well, oh, that's right. It was John Gilmore.
There you go.
Lawyer, yeah.
So I think there's also another thing that makes the gun industry specifically unique is the fact that, I mean, ties back to my original statement on the, oh, we just want to ban semi-auto weapons. You mean all of them. It is the fact that it's always been in the cards that all the guns were going to be banned. That's one thing that I've always pointed out throughout my entire history of Second Amendment activism is ask an anti-gunner, a big one, not the average person around the water cooler. They may have their own opinions, but someone that is either a direct lobbyist for an anti-gun group or a politician who is drafting anti-gun laws. Tell me a gun that is perfectly safe. Tell me a gun that I can buy 30 or 40 of and no one's going to care about. Like, that's all I'm going to be. I'm going to stock up. I'm going to become proficient in this gun, and this will be the gun. And under no circumstances will you ever come for this gun.
And they got nothing.
They might say revolver. Might. Yeah. Maybe.
No. They'll say revolver now.
Yeah.
Except
for
if they're actually honest, which most of them are not, is eventually they're going to come for everything. Single shot, black powder, double barrel shotgun, doesn't matter.
Yep.
I mean, think about the times that they've referred to a bolt action rifle as a high powered sniper rifle.
Yep.
Or also, I'll point out, like, actually, the reason why Aaron said revolver, and that's actually I'm not mocking you. No, that is a great, great statement. But again, that's also just the same as these bans on detachable magazines and bans on this and that, and flash hiders and bayonet lugs and other foolish stuff that does absolutely nothing. Is that anyone remember what is both the Brady campaign and the Coalition to End Gun Violence actual names?
Handgun Control Incorporated.
Yep. And I think it's the Coalition to Ban Handguns was CSGV before they changed it over.
They've changed the name many times I can't keep track.
Yeah.
And also, wasn't DC versus Heller, wasn't that over a revolver?
Not only a revolver, but a .22 caliber single action revolver.
And four of the five sitting justices of the Supreme Court actually said, nope, banning that is perfectly within the lines of the Second Amendment.
Nope, that's an excellent point. But yeah, but the whole reason why Brady and CSGV, and there might be a couple others, because in the 60s, that was the gun control movement, was we're going to ban these handguns. These handguns are a menace. They're not sporting. They're not good. They're causing danger in the cities.
Saturday night specials. Oh yeah.
Let's not refer to the full name of 38 specials.
Yeah. That's really racist.
Yeah. Folks, look it up. Look it up just to get an idea of how charming anti-gunners are.
Yep. Kids, ask your parents.
Yeah. Your parents probably don't even know, but
it depends.
Yeah,
but some parents might have said it.
Yeah, the whole thing was they wanted to ban all handguns, except for handguns are alarmingly popular in the United States. Like, it doesn't even get that much play because everyone's all talking about rifles and all that. Mm-hmm. But that just
handguns were supposed to be included in the National Firearms Act of 1934.
That's true. That's a great point. It slipped my mind. At the angle I was going at, but absolutely, yeah, they were trying to ban handguns when they passed the NFA. That's why there's so many pages on how to define if a gun is concealable or not, and how to define if a gun has too long or too short a barrel, because it was handguns were going to be in that any other weapon category. There was going to be a $5 fee and registration of all handguns in the United States.
It really does explain a lot of the absolute weirdness of the NFA when you go, but why do they care? Why do they bother? Well, when you realize they were trying to do handguns as well, suddenly it makes so much sense.
They were burning all these calories trying to make sure that you couldn't convert a rifle into a concealable weapon, and therefore circumvent the handgun ban. Very similar to, I mean, I see Aaron just posted some videos from Blue Collar Prepping, and there's a guy that has an AR pistol that has an arm brace on it. And it's one of those, like, nope, it's a pistol, even though, it's totally a carbine.
It's a short-barreled rifle, but because of the attachment to the receiver extension, it's not.
Yes, and so the whole reason why they spent so much time trying to define if a gun was concealable or not was because they were going to make concealable weapons illegal unless you said "Mother May I" in the United States, and that got struck down. But when it got struck down, they just simply took out the handgun reference and just still kept short barrel rifles and short barrel shotguns.
It got struck down. I mean, I'm not a historian.
It was removed.
Stricken from the
Wasn't struck down. It was removed from the legislation during debate.
Yes, that's exactly where I was going. I was like, I could be wrong. My memory's not what it could be, but I thought they tried to, and they realized this thing won't pass at all, and so we removed the handguns, and then that's the sop to the masses.
Yep. So the only reason why revolvers are pseudo safe is because the anti-gunners learned before pretty much all of us were born that this bridge is not going to get crossed anytime soon. We are not banning handguns in the United States. Let's go after scary rifles that nobody uses. And it turned into those scary rifles that everybody uses.
Right. Because we're Americans. And when the government tells us we shouldn't have something, we buy lots of them.
Yeah. But the whole idea was, look, they want to ban them all. And that was the whole point. They wanted to ban all guns. And they said, "Well, we can't ban all guns. All right. Well, they won't let us ban the handguns. Let's ban all the long guns. Well, we can't ban all the long guns because there's hunters and sportsmen. Well, let's ban all the semi-auto long guns. Well, no, those guys use those too. All right, let's ban all the ugly semi-auto long guns. You know what? Not many people use
that'll
those.
Work. Yep. We can do that.
And so that's the reason why a flash hider. Who cares about a flash hider? As a matter of fact, I care less about a flash hider than I care about the muzzle brake that's ubiquitous in Massachusetts, where I'll be in the indoor range and someone will be shooting an AR with a muzzle brake on it.
It raises dust off of your shooting bench.
Yeah.
I was at the range years ago. A guy was shooting a short barrel 308 with a muzzle brake. And every time he took a shot, it was like getting slapped with hot sand.
So he was using a Loudoner.
Yeah.
Yes.
I was at a private shoot. It was a blog get together. It was one of the blog shoots. And somebody brought an HK 416 with like a 10-inch barrel and a brake on it that had a port you could put your hands through. Like you could physically like have a conversation with somebody through the port in this brake. And like it was at somebody's house. So like maybe 8 people could shoot shoulder to shoulder on the firing line at any one given time. So essentially you'd line up and it was an invitational blogger shoot. So everybody knew everybody else. So you would pick out the gun you wanted and you would line up and you would start chatting with the person beside you because they knew you and you knew them. And it was just a good time. And you'd line up and line up and line up. And then suddenly you'd get to the firing line and then you'd get to shoot. Hooray. And I got to the firing line and I saw this guy putting this goddamn monstrosity on the bench. And I went,
"Oh dear,
you want to take my spot?" I went to the back of the line. I'm like, I am not shooting beside that thing. I'd shot beside it once before and that was enough.
So I posted a link to the Loudoner Mark II by Snakehound Machine. And for only $100, you can annoy everyone at the range.
I can do that for free, though.
You can loosen every filling on the firing line.
Am I wrong for wondering what that would do to a Mosin?
Oh,
because my Mosin just natively annoys people.
It depends. If it's an M44, it will annoy them and set them on fire.
No, I've got a 9830.
Okay, so it would just annoy them and damage their scopes.
So. My club's indoor range is actually rated up to rifles. And so it's the easiest place to go to shoot a rifle. And so I brought a buddy to the range and me and him were shooting my M44. So Aaron, like your Mosin, but with like, I think 10 inches taken off the barrel. And when we got there, there was a guy who had one of those like super duper custom boxes and he had, I don't know, it was a tricked out gallery pistol. And he was, you know, shooting in gallery position and lining everything up, but I think the box had like a little hard point for a spotting scope, so he could shoot in spotting scope. He might have been wearing the glasses that had the little thing that obscured his offsite eye, so he didn't have to close his eye to make the sight picture and all that. Yeah. And he's shooting that, and then we come in and we set up, and I mean, in the time it took us to get in and get all our gear out and set everything up and set up the targets, he maybe fired 5 rounds.
Uh-huh.
And then 5 rounds stripper clip into the M44. Ba-boom! Check, check, ba-boom! And next thing you know, the guy's standing behind us and he said, "What the hell is that thing?" And I said, "It's a Mosin Nagant M44 and he just looked at it and looked at us and then left. And yes, thank you, David. David just posted a picture of an Obrez.
For people who don't know what an Obrez is, all right, so imagine your Mosin Nagant. Now chop off the stock into a pistol grip and chop off the barrel so that it's basically a stub sticking out past the receiver or whatever the proper term is. The first barrel band. Yeah.
It's 10 to 12 inch.
And it's like, every time I see one of those, I laugh because it's like, there has got to be an easier way to break your wrist.
The good news,
there are some that have been found. This is from Ian on Forgotten Weapons, so I'm going to take it as gospel.
Right, because he's Gun Jesus.
4 to 8 inches barrel length.
I just always look at those and go, okay, and think of operating the bolt on my M39 and go, how do you operate the bolt on that? Where's the leverage?
Well, maybe if you're left-handed, and then you work the bolt with your right.
No, it, still.
And it's not just Mosin's.
But yeah, putting a Laubner on that would be hysterical. Deleterious to one's health.
But hysterical.
Well, hysterical to onlookers, not so much to the poor fool using it.
Yeah, potato, potato.
Unfortunately, it's got a watermark, but I was physically there. I was behind the person taking the photograph that I just posted.
Oh, dear Lord.
And as the guy in the photograph said, if you search Tactical Mosin and you see a guy that has a rad goatee and a ponytail shooting a blacked out, that's actually a Remington 1891. Thankfully it was a Remington 1891 that got to the guy who converted it in just complete. It was like literally just thrown into like a whole pile of horse trade for him. And he says, yeah, there was like no rifling left in the barrel. And it was just, it had been sporterized and just totally ruined.
So it was already bubbed when he got it.
It was bubbed literally to death. And so he said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to cut it down. I'm going to put an M4 stock on it. I'm going to put a cheap, really crappy red dot on it and cut it down super duper short. And as this guy said, when you pull the trigger, it's like the air gets sucked out of your lungs.
I can just visually now put an air cooling jacket on it, and it would literally suck the air out of your lungs.
Oh yeah, but yeah, the muzzle flash replaces all the remaining length of an 1891.
And of course, I felt the need to post the link to the in-range modernized Obrez.
Yeah.
Yeah, what was that? I remember watching that video a while ago.
Somebody came out with like a Archangel, or somebody came out with an extended magazine.
Oh, so that's still a Mosin.
Yeah, that's still a Mosin.
And they put an optic of some sort on it.
Yeah, they put a red dot.
Oh, I just saw your post. I just saw your link pop up.
Yeah. Yeah, I threw it in the link. But yeah, they put an optic on it. They got a pistol grip on it somehow, and
a four pistol grip. Yes,
vertical forward grip. Pistol grip, and a folding stock. And
remarkably, I can't remember what it came off of. It was one of the submachine guns.
Yeah, and they threaded it.
Of course.
So why look, not? In the paraphrased words of General Mattis, Auntie Gunners, listen to me. I'm pleading you with tears in my eyes. Do not ban semi-autos, because we're going to get stupid if you do.
I actually work with some guys. Several of them, not surprisingly, are or served in the Marine Corps, who are planning what they refer to as Civil War II Electric Boogaloo, or just the Boogaloo for short. It's like, oh, guys, I'm sure that this is a lot of fun for you, but OPSEC, if you're really talking about this, you shouldn't be talking about this.
Yeah, there is that. I was going to mention, since we're talking about stupid loss and bolt actions.
Yes, I was going to throw to you at some point soon, Oddball. So,
I made that smooth transition there. So when my dad was down for the funeral, he brought his brand new Ruger American in 6.5 Creedmoor, thinking that we might have a chance to go out and shoot. Sadly, the one day that we would have had free, it was freaking hot outside, and we decided, let's not melt.
It's very hard to get a sight picture through a scope when there is literally a pint of sweat in your eyeball.
Yes. So we didn't get to shoot. And when he left, he got about, I think he got to Ohio when he realized that he had left his bolt action rifle in my living room. So he called me up, and first he said, yeah, so, you know, just tell me how much it is for a box for it and how much it is to ship, and just mail it back to me. I can't do that.
I decline your kind offer to commit a felony. Thank you.
Right, exactly.
A federal felony, just to kick it up a notch.
Right. And I inform him that, no, if I sent it directly to you, that would be a felony. And, you know, give me the address and name of your FFL, and I'll kindly send it off to him. And then you have to do a second background check within 2 months on the same rifle.
Yep.
And he didn't believe me. So first he asked the FFL, and the FFL actually, I think he actually told my dad, yeah, it'll be fine. Just have him send it to you. And I'm not going to do that. To which point my dad finally said, okay, well, I do know the local ATF guy, so I'll give him a call.
It's safer to give him a call. That way you can't shoot your dog.
Right. Absolutely. And my dad doesn't even have a dog, so...
Well, they would issue him one for the purpose.
Exactly. So the ATF guy actually went and read the regulations and said, yeah, so if my dad was still down here, he could mail it to himself where he lives, and that would be cool. But since he's already back up at his place, I can't mail the gun that everybody says, yes, belongs to him, and that he just did a background check to possess a month and a half ago. Yeah. I can't mail it directly to him. I have to mail it to the FFL. And like I said, then he has to pay the transfer fee and do another background check on it to get his gun back.
I would ask for the reasoning behind why it's kosher to mail yourself a gun, but it's not kosher to have your son mail you your own gun. But I realize there will be no sense here.
Yes.
So it does actually, the reason why you can do that actually makes some sense. It was written into the law to specifically allow you to mail it to yourself. So like, say
going
I decided
on a hunting
to go
trip in Wyoming.
Yeah, I could send myself, instead of flying with the rifle, which causes all sorts of issues, I can mail the rifle to myself, to the hunting lodge in Wyoming, and, you know, say, you know, ship to Oddball care of whatever hunting lodge.
Mm-hmm.
And they can receive it, not open the package, Right. Receive it and hold it for me until I show up.
Yeah, and then when you get there, you open the package. You've got your rifle. You acquire ammunition locally for the hunt, or you travel with the ammunition, right. Which is almost as aggravating as traveling with a firearm.
I would say considerably less. You know, I don't think even do you need to, I've never flown with ammunition alone. I've flown with a gun and ammunition, and I've flown with a gun without ammunition.
But that's a good point.
I want to say that you do have to do something to declare the ammunition, because I know that sending ammunition like air freight without it being part of a hazardous materials package is
TSA regulation. Declare the firearm and or ammunition.
Okay.
I've never done it either. I've always traveled I've never actually
declared my ammunition. I have declared my firearm, and my ammunition's been somewhere else because speaking of stupid laws on the, all right, I've got this magical lockbox and suddenly the, you know, and I would love to just throw my gun and my ammunition in this lockbox and just lock it all up tight. I usually actually put whatever knives I'm bringing too in the box. And I'd love to be able to throw the ammunition in too. That way it's all in just a nice little sealed package. Ta-da.
With the ammunition, just throw it in your carry-on. You'll be fine.
Yeah. But no, but like,
children do not listen to Oddball.
Literally in compliance with the rules, my gun is locked up in a nice little hard-sided case, and whatever carry ammo I intend to stuff in the gun when I get to wherever I'm going is just floating around loose in my bag. It's in a box. It's in the original factory box.
Ammunition may be transported in the same hard-sided locked case as a firearm if it has been packed as described above in a fiber such as cardboard, wood, plastic, or metal box specifically designed to carry ammunition and declared to your airline.
Let me interrupt because I have a story about that. Okay.
Yes. I am just reading the TSA regulations. I am not commenting on how they're actually enforced. Please, Aaron, share.
All right. So you specifically said, among other things, a metal box whose purpose was to transport ammunition.
Yes.
Okay. This is actually a point of contention because it depends on which TSA agent you run into as to whether or not a magazine counts.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are a lot of people who go, look, it's a metal box. It contains the ammunition. I guess the worry about it being loose is that one of them might rattle around and you'll hit the primer and it'll ignite. And it's like, look, there's no way for this to happen. And there are some who are, it's like, yeah, it's contained. You meet the definition. That's fine. And then there are others who are going, no, that is not a box. That is a magazine. Apparently the spring ruins the whole thing. And this was actually a problem at one of the GRPCs I attended. And some of the people who left early were actually sending messages back to tell, and it was announced in front of the crowd, like on Sunday, and they were saying, you know, if you're flying out of such and such airport and you brought your carry gun with you, you're going to have to throw your ammunition out if you didn't, you know, bring the actual box it came in with. And
or some other container that you can properly store it.
And that's just, I think
I might have part of the source of the confusion is, allow me to read from the actual TSA regulation. Firearm magazines and ammunition clips, whether loaded or empty, must be securely boxed or included within a hard-sided case containing an unloaded firearm. Okay, so that implies that the ammunition magazines or clips can be loaded, right?
It sure sounds like it, but I know that logic has no place here.
Okay, go up four bullets. Firearms must be unloaded and locked in a hard-sided container and transported as checked baggage only. As defined by 49 CFR 1540.5, a loaded firearm has a live round of ammunition or any component thereof in the chamber or cylinder or in a magazine inserted in the firearm.
Right.
So,
but they didn't have the magazine inserted.
As long as it's not inserted in the firearm, the magazine, according to their own regulations, should be allowed to be loaded.
The problem is that there are many, many, many accounts of the TSA completely ignoring their own regulations.
Yeah. Okay, so Annette Evans.
I travel with a copy of them.
Annette Evans, the tiny purple demon. She is a competitive shooter. She flies a lot with her guns, and unless I'm completely mistaken, is a lawyer in real life. Not only carries copies of these regulations, but has all sorts of horror stories about all the arguments she has gotten into with these people. And it's not really enough to just say, look, there it is in your own regulations. But there have been times the police have been called.
Yeah. And similarly, Deviant Olam mm-hmm. goes through the same airport on a regular basis with a firearm and has reported that they have screwed up damn near every time.
You could have stopped after the word up.
Well, yeah. And you know, he regularly shows up to his flights like 4 hours early and just goes ahead and says, yep, we're going to have this argument.
Oh yeah. He's gotten people on video actually saying that either they are going to or have broken the law.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
I mean,
it's... Now, if you remember some of my earlier segments, I talked about traveling with a firearm from the Albany airport, and every single time things were slightly different. You know, one time, do you want me to open the case? No. The next time, you have to open the case. Okay. Do you want me to confirm that the gun is clear? No. Another time, you must confirm that the gun is clear. Mm-hmm. Another time, don't touch the gun. Another time, pick up the gun and hand it to me.
And then there are the
another time. Yeah, on and on.
Well, you know, then there are the times where they blatantly want to break the law where, all right, you know, give me the key, tell me the combination, and I'm going to take it in here and inspect it. And that's where people like Annette say, you know what? Let's just call the police and find out. And if I'm wrong, they can arrest me.
Yep. Now, one of the things in the Albany airport was sometimes it would be the TSA rep would come over to inspect the firearm. Other times it was Albany County Sheriff's Office would come over to inspect the firearm. It was just all over the place. I never knew what I was going to get.
Yeah, with Deviant Olam, it was generally he's constantly having his locks cut off his gun cases. And he's told, oh, yeah, because they're not TSA regulations. Here's the regulation for this case. I specifically am not allowed to use your locks.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
There's been times when they have put their locks on after they've inspected the gun. They've cut his locks off and then inspected the gun and then locked the case back up with their locks and then given him the case and did not have the key or combination for the locks. I mean, of course, it's Deviant Olam, so he's got the TSA key on his keychain.
Right. Yeah, actually, I've had some sort of... One time it was... So I have the locked handgun case with my locks inside the soft-sided suitcase, which I locked with a TSA lock. At the destination, the locked handgun case with my locks is still inside the suitcase. There is no TSA lock. Disappeared in transit. It didn't break off because it was hooked through the loops on the zipper pulls.
They probably forgot to reattach it. You know, they took it off to inspect your case and then for whatever reason forgot to put the lock back on.
But once they key it, they can reset the combination. They've got a free lock. They have, you know, they can resell them.
I hadn't even thought of that.
Yeah. All I got to say is if you know anything about lock picking, like the first thing you should go buy a TSA lock.
Good practice.
And
it's easy.
No, it's not good practice. That is your confidence booster.
Yeah. That's what I say. It's just, if you're just getting started,
I'm doing this.
I can do this.
Yes. I'm okay. Clearly I'm doing this right. Cause I got this open in 3 seconds.
Yep.
Like,
now
you could
hold on to it and shake it 4 times.
You could literally pick that crappy wafer lock with like 2 paper clips.
Yeah, I've actually been kind of curious as to what's the point of even using the TSA lock since, well, my bags are in my possession up until the point that I drop them on the carousel. The folks that I want to make sure can't get into my bags, well,
they can pop a TSA lock.
Have that key.
Right.
And if anybody else is particularly interested in getting into your bags and has some sort of angle where they can get through, where they're not one of the people that is trusted with the key, they can get a key. All you need to do is go online. Like, literally, like, the TSA posted a picture in their, like, in the first, like, week of unveiling these locks, posted a picture of the key showing that, you know, this is the key that will unlock all of these locks, no matter what you set the combination for.
Yep.
Well, good. You've got the key. You've got a picture of it. You know the bidding code.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
It's very much like was it Blu-ray? What was the codecs that, like, showed up within, like, 3 milliseconds of the technology being unveiled? It was one of the video compression softwares that they were saying, oh, this will make it pirate proof, and literally people were printing on t-shirts.
Yeah, I think it was one of the DVDs.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, DVD plus or no, DVD minus, one of those.
Either way.
Of course, one of my favorite universal keys is a knife. I mean, if you're not using a hard-sided case, and even them, they got to bend somewhere. You know, if you really got to get in, just cut the thing.
Yeah.
A knife, frankly, with the number of times that I've gotten bags back that have slashes in the side, and the airport just goes, oops, well, I guess it got caught up in the system somewhere.
That wasn't any of our people. That just was the equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. I can see where it punctured. I can see where the nice sharp edge. I would like to take a tour of your system so we can find where the sharp edge is that perfectly slashed my suitcase.
Oh,
I mean, there is the Denver airport, which did honestly have that issue, but
yeah, I'm sure Illuminati. Not just Denver. Pardon?
And the Illuminati.
Oh no! When the Denver airport first opened, it was touted as this big, wonderful, high-tech airport, and in the first couple months it was just eating luggage. I like it might some of the pieces of luggage that went through there might as well have gone through a chipper shredder.
They weren't feeding the Samsonite gorilla.
Kids, but also ask your
parents.
You want some fun, Google Denver airport conspiracy theories. It's some amusing reads.
So while we're talking about things that drive us crazy, and because I know we're getting close to the episode end, I'm pretty sure, there's something that's going on that is just driving me absolutely bug nuts. So everyone has heard about the terrible, horrible, awful, no good Amazon fire that is like destroying the lungs of the planet, and unless we put an end to it, we're all going to die.
Unless we donate lots and lots of money to these political causes, we will all die.
Right. So here's the thing. No less than ultra-liberal Mother Jones has come out with an article stating, and I quote, "Stop sharing those viral photos of the Amazon burning," unquote. Subtitle, "The Amazon is on fire, but the photos you're seeing on social media don't show it." And you read this. And, okay, yes, there's a fire, and, I'll get to that in a minute, but what they are showing, I mean, some of the pictures are from years ago. One of them is from a forest fire in California.
Yeah, others from the Midwest, and anywhere through the late 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
And 30-year-old photos found.
Yeah, and so there's all of this, and then there's the fact that I've got a story here from NASA.gov where they state, and I quote, "As of August 16th, 2019, an analysis of NASA satellite data indicated that total fire activity across the Amazon basin this year has been close to the average in comparison to the past 15 years. In other words, yes, it's on fire, but this is nothing special. This is nothing new. It burns, or people set fire to it all the time."
I'd like to interject a little bit of additional insanity.
Please.
If I may. I was following a thread where this was going back and forth, and somebody did reference the NASA as well as the NOAA information on the fact that, yeah, this is the same as every year, pretty much. Well, Trump's people are in charge of the whichever organization, so you know they're not telling the truth.
Which is why I love that Mother Jones article. It's like, look, you're going to argue with that? And so this makes me wonder, and I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist. I really don't want to be paranoid and think that everyone is out to get me. But as I mentioned a couple weeks ago when I was talking with Oddball, the media does not inform because it wants you to be informed. It does not have the whole "the public has a right to know," that the myth of journalistic integrity is pretty much dead and buried. The media tells stories to make money, to get ad revenue, and that's why so often, if it bleeds, it leads. Mm-hmm. And I have to wonder, if this is, if this demonstrably false position is being sponsored everywhere, then why? And I hate myself for thinking this, but I'm going, well, gosh golly, I haven't heard much about Hong Kong recently. I haven't heard much about Epstein recently. Uh-huh. Oh, is there a connection? Because I desperately want there not to be, but I'm so cynical at this point that I'm afraid there is.
Well, and has anybody heard about Turkey in the news lately?
I have not.
I've heard a little bit about Turkey simply because my goddaughter, her in-laws live there. That's about the only reason.
Yeah. Apparently, Turkey has pretty much kicked out any American out of the country.
Uh-huh.
And
not just Americans.
Not just Americans. Thrown all sorts of college professors, scientists, etc., in jail. And the U.S. State Department recently actually declared, yeah, don't go to Turkey if you have a choice.
Have they started rounding up Armenians again?
Ooh.
Give it time.
I think they've actually been doing that for a little while now, actually.
Ouch. To our readers who don't know what I'm talking about, look up Armenian genocide.
Yeah.
Yeah, according to the travel.state.gov, U.S. Department of State travel advisories, Turkey has now reached level 3, which means do not travel areas near them.
Yeah, and level 4 is basically, this is an active
don't
war
go.
Zone.
Yeah, 1 is normal precautions, 2 is increased caution, 3 is reconsider travel, and 4 is do not travel. There is no 5. So, yeah.
But the last time I remember hearing about Turkey in the news was however many years ago when there was the aborted coup.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, and that Saudi Arabian journalist that was murdered there.
That was in Turkey? I didn't know that.
I think that was in the Saudi.
Khashoggi, right?
Yeah. I think if I remember correctly, I'm going off the top of my head, but I believe that was at the Saudi embassy in Turkey.
Well, Turkey has been kind of cozying up more to Russia again lately. And I just pulled this up. I'd heard something about it, but it's actually more than I thought. The Trump administration has formally withdrawn its offer for Turkey to purchase a Patriot missile system in retaliation for Turkey's receipt of the Russian-made S-400 missile system. But further down in the article, the U.S. has also ejected Turkey from the F-35 jet program, preventing Turkey from acquiring some 100 of the stealth jets and removing Turkish companies from the production chain.
And, of course, there was that time, when it was a year or two ago, when residents of the Turkish embassy went onto U.S. soil and beat up a bunch of protesters while the D.C. police just kind of watched.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what the D.C. police are mostly paid to do, isn't it?
Yeah.
Watch and report?
Yeah.
So I think to close us out, I think I'll close us out on a slightly more positive note.
Oh, please.
I can do that too.
Yeah. That would be wonderful.
Well, yeah, maybe I'll leave it to you, David, because mine's slightly more only because I don't know if you guys have been following. Like, I haven't compiled a list or all that, but it seems like every time I turn on the news, there's a news story of the police rounding up somebody who has acquired weapons and posted a manifesto on what they're going to do and what they're going to shoot up.
Mm-hmm.
And then the police come and they arrest them. And, well, first up, I will say, whenever I see like any, you know, wide scale, you know, arresting for, I guess you could say soft crimes. This is, I mean, of course it's, you know, criminal threat, but not actually enacting something. Right. They're not catching them directly in the act. I do have a little bit of hesitancy on it, on it being abused, but at the same time, much like when the Me Too movement was going through Hollywood, I was cautiously looking, but it seems like everybody that they got was mostly bad. There's a few exceptions, but
they tried to get a lot of people who weren't bad, but the accusations fell apart when the truth was shined on them.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so like Aziz Ansari got a Me Too, strike or whatever you want to say, you mm-hmm. know, on him. And it was really, it seems like it was just a date that just didn't go so well.
Yes, and apparently he is very awkward on dates.
Yeah, and so
listened to any of his routines, shouldn't surprise you.
Mm-hmm. No, and it didn't appear to harm his career terribly.
No.
So again, I'm always hesitant to with this, but it seems like every single story that I've heard, they're probably bad guys. Like, especially since it always involves no. There's a specifics. It's not like, oh, they had, you know, dozens of semi-auto weapons and, you know, several thousand rounds of ammunition. Oh, wait, that's Weird Beard.
That's a range trip.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, but there's another thought here, Weird, and I'm going to bring us down for a moment. I'm sorry. Is those could be the precursors to make this the new normal. Is that sets the expectation so that in the future, when the police go grab somebody, oh, well, they were probably bad like all of those others.
Yeah. That's why I'm always cautious on this. But so far, it appears to be fine. Mm-hmm. And I would say, actually, right now, I am very, very pleased on it because all of these shootings, I can't think of a single one, at least recently, where the shooter was the they came out of nowhere. No,
Las Vegas.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. That guy.
That's the exception that proves the rule.
Did come out of nowhere, but even that, you know, fool that got popped in the head before he even hurt anybody in the Texas courthouse.
I shouldn't laugh at somebody dying.
Yeah, the boogalooser. He had like months of YouTube videos where he's crazy stuff into it. And again, it's one of those situations on the, there was people going on. I'm sure there was somebody that said, look, I know this guy. Look, I work with this guy. And he's crossing the line here. He's really sliding. He really needs help. And as up until, you know, really, I think maybe, well, it's, I think it's probably going to be this dual attack in Texas and Ohio that really, I think, seems to be the turning point where now all of a sudden police are like, no, these are Broward County is in shambles right now because of the foolishness done by the sheriff's department there.
Honestly, I am shocked and appalled that Sheriff Israel is not in prison.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So all is right. Most of the state.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just, you know, I don't want him to go away for life, just like, you know, 6 months in Gen Pop.
Yeah.
Or life. Wait,
that would be life. What was that, Aaron?
I made the same joke you did. Or life. Know, it's 6 months in Gen Pop as a cop. Yeah, you're mm-hmm. not likely to make it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say that there is some benefit of I have seen some good things for me being an advocate in that the news stories of oh my God, a man with a rifle in his car and 100 rounds. I've been sitting on the couch with people who weren't gun folks who then looked at me and went, so how many rounds did, when you took me to the range, how many rounds did we go to the range with? What, wasn't that a bit more than 100?
It was only a zero more.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, but, you know, a bit more than one rifle.
Yeah. But but what I'm trying to get at with this is, with all the talk of red flag laws, like, these people are being, you know, are making their presence known. The police are intervening and they have probable cause. There's cause, there's motive and opportunity. They've made threats. They have guns. They're talking about local places. There's reason to believe that they might actually be meaning it when they say these sort of things. So they can at least be evaluated. And that is how our system works. And that's like, that's, I heard about one recently in Ohio, which is where, you know, where one of the shootings was and doesn't have a red flag law, and they're proposing a red flag law. And this guy had guns and was going to shoot up, I think, a synagogue, if I remember correctly. And yeah, so they've arrested him. I don't know what's become of him, but he's going through the system right now. He's getting his day in court. He's having his due process. And if it turns out that, yeah, no, he was really going to hurt them, he's going to face charges and probably going to lose his right to own firearms. And frankly, for someone like that, I'm not going to lose any sleep over.
As long Meanwhile, as it's done properly and in accordance with the law and the Constitution.
Exactly. That's, I mean, again, that's why I'm always hesitant, but at the same time, we can't always assume that the system is going, you know, the system isn't going to always be abused. That's no, not what systems are there for.
Well, that's the thing with, frankly, with red law, with red flag laws, is that to a normal and sane person, it sounds like a good idea, because if everybody is on the up and up, it you know, and it's actually used properly, it's not a bad idea.
I'm going to flag that on you, Oddball. No, I'm going to say right now, when you just hear it in a complete vacuum and don't realize that, no. If somebody's doing something bad and they're doing something actually bad, the cops can come in and grab them.
Well, I mean,
you know, if you think that there's absolutely nothing, if you think that somebody's plotting to do horrible things and there's just no law whatsoever, red flag, that's the only time a red flag law makes sense. But other than that, essentially what we have right now is, when someone shows that they are capable and have a desire to do something really horrible, the police can swoop in and grab the person.
Right.
With red flag laws,
they're arresting the guns.
They lock up the guns and leave the nutbag.
Right. Well, his car, his kitchen chemicals, his gasoline, his knives, his children. He has access to all of those things. Nothing can possibly go wrong with their plan.
Yeah.
Well, this is true. Yeah. But it's one of those things that people who are outside of actually being neck deep in these arguments, like we are, it can sound very reasonable. And it's the problem of, honestly, I know people that I would not hesitate to believe that if there was a red flag law in my state, that they would declare me to be problematic simply because I own guns.
Oh yeah.
End of story.
That's the thing.
Oh, I mean, I've been just right out openly threatened with it so much that I took a screenshot of it and put it on my blog.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know people who, I know people that have gotten thrown into, mental institutions for observation for the weekend. Basically because they pissed off one psychiatrist.
Yep.
But yeah, right. So either way, I think one of the things that for you activists out there that are listening to remember, when you hear people talk about red flag laws, essentially point out the fact that they are like the laws that we have right now, only dumber, in the fact that instead of taking the dangerous person and either locking them up for crimes or locking them up for evaluation until we can determine if they are a danger or not. Instead, it is taking the guns away from the person who is allegedly a danger, because otherwise, why would you be taking their property, and just leaving them? I did an audio fisk a while back where I was talking about, there was a guy that Don Shipley, the Navy SEAL who does the exposure of the fake Navy SEALs.
Yes. The Stolen Valor guy.
Yeah. He ended up having one of the guys that he confronted who claimed to be a Navy SEAL and was never in the SEALs, started stalking him and making threats and libel, and just the guy was, I mean, as unbalanced as you get on the, hey, I'll just make up a military career for myself, as some do. And Shipley ended up having to file restraining orders, which the guy violated and ended up getting thrown in jail for. And the guy ended up dying, crashing his experimental aircraft into a golf course.
I remember hearing about that.
So the guy is a convicted felon. He was, I think, he was out on bail actually at the time. And he went to an airport and got into an airplane filled with, I don't know if it was filled with jet fuel. Actually, I don't know that much about airplanes.
It would have, if it was a small prop plane, single engine or twin engine, it's aviation fuel, which is glorified kerosene.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't ignite as easily. Jet fuel is a different animal.
Yeah. But either way, again, it's just one of those things of the, look, I get what you're saying and I get what you're trying to do. Red flag laws do not do anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think on that note, unless there's any other stories, did you have something else, David?
I did.
Okay.
And this is a purely positive thing.
All right.
Yay.
Are any of you familiar with a young woman by the name of Morgan Zegers?
You're breaking up on that one. What was it?
Anyone familiar with a young woman named Morgan Zegers? Z-E-G-E-R-S.
I have not heard of this person.
Mm-mm.
Okay. She's in her early 20s, I believe. And when she was born and raised in upstate New York. And while she was in college, she founded a group called Zegers Freedom Flags. She was a small woodworking business, handcrafted wooden American flags.
Oh, her.
To pay off her student debts. Yes. Yes. And she then ran for the New York State Assembly last year. She did not win, but at 21 years old, she almost beat her heavily funded incumbent opponent.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
Yes. Yeah, so in New York, one of the most gerrymandered of states, for the New York State Assembly, she almost beat the incumbent as a 21-year-old college graduate. So she has founded an organization called YAAS, Y-A-A-S, YAAS, Young Americans Against Socialism.
Yeah, and the socialists can't stand her.
No, she is young, she's attractive, she's intelligent, she's personable, all this stuff. And it's basically, she is using the methods of the left to push socialism, to fight socialism. And as she puts it, and it's easier for us because we've got facts to back it up. And she interviews people who escaped from Venezuela, from Cuba, from Eastern Europe during the Soviet occupation. So she's getting stories from people who escaped socialism and communism.
Yeah.
But she's using social media to drive the message, and you know, it's really actually being to some effect. Yeah, it's really starting to make an impact.
Mm-hmm.
Because now the young people who, I know this can't work, but I don't have any facts, similar to Weird, your audio fisks for facts to debunk them, is they can now pull up one of her videos or one of her posts or one of her links and say, you say this, but here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No. So it's really neat that this young, and she's getting a lot of attention and quite a bit of support. She could use more support, but Yeah, I came across this a few months ago, and I kept on meaning to bring it up, and I was reminded of it again earlier today. Somebody posted something about it, but I think it's pretty much a purely positive thing.
That's awesome, and I am effectively uplifted. Thank you very much, Dave.
You are welcome. We always talk about the the millennials end the world because they don't do anything and they're all for socialism, and bam, here we go.
Mm-hmm.
Someone called her the anti-millennial. I think actually more millennials are like her than you think.
There's been a whole bunch of polls that are saying that the millennials are definitely not coming up for gun control the way everyone was hoping for, especially Bloomberg with his March for Our Lives.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly, you saw when you were watching if anybody watched the news coverage of the Parkland shooting, like within the 24-hour, 48-hour news cycle of the shooting, where they were interviewing students, and yes, David Hogg and Emma Gonzalez all got up and talked their nonsense, but there was a number, like it was like literally 50-50 of the people that were, not even pro-gun versus anti-gun, but stridently anti-gun versus, look, gun control wouldn't stop this. We need to do, if there's a solution, it's not with the guns. So, yeah. And I think on that note, I think we have gone more than long enough. And so I'll start with David. David, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Glad to be here.
And we also have a very lovely individual, but he doesn't photograph well, Oddball.
And if you want to see me in real life, unfortunately, this will be broadcast after Dragon Con, but I may post something in the Facebook group announcing that I'll be down there, and hopefully we can meet up.
And, of course, the Her Majesty, the God Empress, the angel from on high, Aaron Paulette.
I accept votives of rum and dark chocolate and ammunition.
We'll talk about that after the show.
Okay, then.
And I am Weird Beard, and I bid you all good night.